then also in terms of our vocational training sector, that is an increase of about 15% to that program. You will notice that the skill development budget has actually slightly decreased. It's basically due to the exchequer contribution being reduced, and the CFO will allude to that later on. If we look now and we try to reclassify that in terms of the various areas in terms of salary bills, we will notice that the examination and moderators has increased dramatically, which is about 151%. This was money that was not previously budgeted for, and this is basically in terms of the FET sector, in terms of the examiners and moderators that have now come over. You will also notice that there's been a reduction in terms of capital expenditure, projected capital expenditure, which is a reduction of 17%. This is as a result of a once-off payment that was made in the previous financial year to Indlela, and which is obviously not occurring again in this financial year. So you will notice that there's been a reduction over there. But in key, you will notice that we've highlighted now the 19% and we've increased in budget over the previous financial year. Just to give you in terms of where our money currently goes, the university sector takes approximately 83% of the budget, which is then followed by the FET sector, which consumes about 16% of the budget of this department. If you look in terms of the operational running of this department, only 0.56% is actually utilized in terms of the administration. So you can actually see that for the amount of money that is actually going through the department's books, a small percentage, less than 1%, is actually used on administration. Approximately 98.3% actually goes through as transfers out of this department, and I've highlighted already to the 12.4% increase over the 3-year MTEF cycle. Just to highlight that the growth in budget is mainly due to additional funding on the transfer items as well as compensation of employees, including the provision of examination and audit, which is in the FET sector that we've alluded to. Just to give also an indication in terms of how we'll be supporting students in terms of net Swiss bursaries, it's basically an equal split between university education and FET colleges in the region of 1.3 and 1.3 again for FETs. We've set aside roughly 50 million rand for this financially in terms of the planning for the two new universities in Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape. Then we've also set aside about 40 million for examination services, and then also in terms of the increased student enrollment, additional 250 million as well as conditions of service at 104. That's just again in terms of breakdown in terms of the money that is currently going out based in terms of our public entities, FET colleges, universities, as well as the councils of higher education, SACWA and QCTOs. And that again totals up into approximately the 37 billion that we were referring to. So in essence, if you take, for example, we now look at, on the final breakdown, you will notice that if we start taking, for example, the direct charges away, the balance of funds that is left to this department is 28 billion. We then take the transfer that goes to universities, National Skills Fund, public entities, FET conditional grants and the other levies to the seekers away, and we take the salary component off, the balance left for operational purposes for this department is only on 162 million rand, and that is from which we drive the projects and support processes to the various provinces out as well as to the institutions. In essence, that is the presentation. If there are any questions, my colleagues will assist me in those specific areas. I think might be if the CFO could just allude in terms of the exchequer contribution that has been reduced in terms of the other budgetary line items.
Chairperson, perhaps just to give some more explanation specifically on that reduction of skills development, although it looks a bit funny to think we are having that as one of our key functions. But just to explain that the National Skills Fund is funded in two portions. First of all, as part of the direct charge, as indicated, which is the levy transfer to the NSF, and that is the majority of funding that goes to the NSF. But then there's also a second contribution which is what we refer to as an exchequer contribution, which formed part of the normal allocation to the department. So that is just in addition to the levy transfer, an additional amount that National Treasury makes available to go to the NSF for the operations. Now, over the MTF, that amount declines partly because of the increases on the levies, so equally the exchequer contribution will decline slightly. That is the majority of that decline. The other part, although it is a small amount, it's less than 10 million, is partly based on simply reprioritization of functions within the department. So it shows a decline, but that decline is made up in some of the other programs as increases there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CFO and Faisal. Chairperson and members, that is the input of the department in respect to the strategic plan and the budget. Let me highlight again the addendum to the strategic plan. That is where we are putting the specific targets for each of the strategic objectives that you would find in the strategic plan. Thank you very much.
Honorable Deputy Minister, let me just take this opportunity to thank the department for their presentation. And maybe before, because I'm going to allow members to interact with their presentation, this is what we always indicate to the department, that if you look into the nature of the institution, that is the NCOP, we are representatives from the provinces. So in most cases, you find a situation where the questions or the clarifications will be based on the experience of members from the provinces. So I know that this is not for the first time that the department appearing before the select committee. They know and how to accommodate the interests of different provinces. On that note, members, I'm going to allow members to ask questions or seek clarity seeking questions. Honorable Nube, Honorable Desilius, it will be Honorable Mashamaite and Honorable Faba.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister, thank you for being with us. My first question will be, on the organogram to say you are envisaging opening offices in each province. And then your organogram then has approved posts. What I would want to be explained to is that does this organogram on page 9 include the posts, these 3 people from each province? And addition to that, you have funded post 895 short of, or then permanently filled 699, temporary filled 152, and we have vacancy of 44, and we have advertised 80. From the background where one is coming from, is that I'm not sure how long has the 152 been temporary employed. because you exceed 6 months and 12 months, you are creating legitimate expectation and in line with the job creation. One would love to know why, when we have funded post of 895, we have only failed 699 and temporary failed 152. I'm not sure whether these are by the consultancy, whatever it is, because we have advertised only 80. Why under advertising or under employing people? So it then links up with the question of, have you taken into account these three posts per province in terms of your provincial offices? And the other one is on university education. When the ruling party was campaigning in its manifesto of 2009, there is a whole question of reopening of teacher colleges. I don't know in terms of the financials, where is it located? Or one is interested in terms of where is it located, or what is the progress into that? I see the new universities, reopening of teacher colleges. The other one is on occupationally directed programs. You have 49,081. Before I came here, I was in the education sector. And there was this cry of enrollment, recruitment of learners to the foundation phase. At that time, 2008-09, before I came here, it was the question of white females. A large number of white females trained at universities at foundation phase. And as a country, we may be facing a problem in years to come in terms of at the foundation phase, and you have the aging educators. As they age and die, you will then have to employ Funder Melve at Zola or at Sikisik, because there are no new intakes from the Africans. So what we want is that as you recruit, what is the picture now? Because I know with Funza Lushaka, the priority is on math and science. Is there any priority in terms of what the country will have to face in 10 years to come or 15 years to come? The other one is on vocational and continuing education and training. One is aware that there's been series of summits in terms of the FET curriculum, a new landscape. But the current picture is that there's a high failure rate of students that are at the NCV programs. It's a high failure rate because of the capacity of the lecturers. When I was still in education, being their leader, they would cry to say, we've been microwaved. We don't understand this curriculum. And at the same time, we have to mediate it to the learners. And we are sorry that we fail them, whereas we know that we have contributed as lecturers because of the capacity. And I see there is a training of 750 lecturers. I'm coming from Gauteng, and we have many FET colleges in Gauteng, and one would want to know the breakage of the 750. To say, if we have trained 750 and this demand of saying they want to have capacity, where is it located also in terms of the new training, the rollout program in terms of reaching out also the colleges in other provinces? If we have 20 only lecturers trained in Gauteng, what is the model of your training? Is it still trainer-trainer or is it direct training? Because the trainer-trainer has far-reaching implications in terms of microwaving, or I become part of the trainee that would not understand when I'm supposed to be cascading it down, which is the implication of what has happened and which impact on the high failure rate. And on the same venture, whilst we are focusing on vocational education, there has been a cry also to say the introduction of the NCV has an unintended consequence, because they had to cut the numbers of the intake per class. We have a lot of unemployed youth, we have unemployed people that have been retrenched and whatever, and we then are channeling them to the FET colleges because we have problems of capacity of private providers. Now, what are your plans in opening up and so that they're mediating the whole question of job creation and skills, people to acquire skills so that they are able to live for themselves. Also, with your training at universities, the whole question of sports teachers. With the townships, I know that township schools don't have dedicated sports teachers. But because I was based at Zochazem when I was still a teacher, it was that would have at Jablani Technical High School, there will be a specialist teacher there for rugby, for athletes, for whatever. And but also, as it was a technical, it will open up for more people at Zochazem. And you go to other schools, you don't have that, and it's now going to be compulsory in terms of each school to have sports. Now, from your side, not from the sports department, and the training at university level, as you recruit, is there any planning in terms of introducing the teachers that you specialize in sports? The other one is on the learnerships. One is aware also, because I was also involved in skills development before I came here. The heavily reliance at that time, I know now you have a focused venture, the heavily reliance of the sitters at that time was the question of private providers offering the learnerships. And there has been a cry all over the employers, the universities, to say, if you acquire a qualification through the learnership, then it means it's of a low quality. Then they will prefer to say they will employ people that are coming from the University of Technology or University Strength. So, as we have these 20 learnerships, I think it's the previous years, and as you come up with the strengthening of the capacity of the FET colleges, are you also looking at, remember I indicated about the small class size, and the demand uptake on learnerships and the spending thereof of the sitters with their money to open up on learnerships. On the NSF, also in my previous life, the windows, or there were windows that were there in terms of the allocation, dispersing the NSF funds. Is it still there? Do people know that you have a window of applying for ABCD? Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Cindy. I was going to ask you just to pause and then we'll have the second round.
I saw you.
Honorable Zivilia.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My question is on the program for the key priorities. The first one, the department stated here to expand and increase access to the post-school system by offering additional qualifications for youth and adults who do not meet the requirements, the last part, who do not meet the requirements for entrance into post-secondary college or university courses. Now, can the department tell us what will they actually do to increase that? Because the students going to the colleges and the universities come from the higher the secondary schools. Now, on the college and the university side, what actually you plan to help those students to get those requirements? Then on page 24, the 15,000 workbooks for students in mathematics and mathematics literacy. Now these workbooks, will they be given to the students, or will the lecturers be helping the students how to implement and understand those workbooks? That is my interest in that one. And then there's 50 colleges in South Africa, and let me just go to that page now. I think there's a spreading of 20 colleges. Where's that page now? But it's referring to the department are planning to assist and 20 colleges in South Africa. And what about the other 30 colleges? And where are these 20 colleges situated? That is my question in connection with that one. Then most of the budget from the department will be transferred to other institutions. Now I'm actually worrying about the control and monitoring of those funds. What system is in place in the department to control those funds and the report from those different institutions during the financial year, so that the department can control and monitor how it is actually spent and what is the situation currently about the expenditure during the year on those different items and requirements from the department. Then, Madam Chairperson, on page, I don't have a number on this one, but it's on finance, the FET colleges, college education, there's a very sharp increase from 800 and say 900 million to 1,381, and I understand that there will be a very huge increase in students and also other administration fees at the different FET colleges. Can the department just explain so that my understanding can be better, the rise from 900 to the 1,381 million. And then the establishment of the universities in Mpumalanga, Northern Cape. 2011 and 12, there's 50 million In 2012-30, there is 100 million. Will these money spent in both provinces in building the universities, or are they referring to the 50 million first in the one province and then the other in the next province? Just explanation around that. And then the examination services, 39 million to the 61 million. Is that the examination services, do that also include the one under the basic education, or is that separate? Are you only referring to the examination at the colleges and the universities? And what is the reason why there is so sharp increase from 39 to the 61 million? If it is in connection with the second part of my question, colleges and universities. And then the increase of student enrollment, the 250 million to 427 million. Now, that money, can the department just elaborate on how and for what that money is actually planned for? I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Thanks, the Deputy Minister and the DG and your team. Chair, mine is in relation with the new universities that the department intends to build in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. But we are not clear as to at what stage is this process. We are told about the report, interim report, which has been received, but we don't know the contents of the report. That gives the stage. Where is the stage? Because here we talk about, the department talks about the identification of location, acquisition of land, upgrading of identified facilities, legal processes, functional and technical specifications. But I just want to get it clear, DG, as to at what stage are we now, so that we are clear on that. My second question, Honorable Chair, is in relation with the regional offices. The department here reported that there will be a regional office, one regional office per province. And each office per province will have three core staff members. Now, here I'm having very serious problems. I need very clear clarification. My first on this one is, this one office per province, in which region is this office is going to be located? Because if you talk of a province, you may find province have got maybe five districts or six districts, depending on the size of that province. Now, the location of this office, it will be in which province, and how effective it is going to be given the size of the province itself. Because I can give you an example, for instance, in Limpopo. If you put this office in the Vembe region, and it must service the province from Vembe region up to Waterberg region, which it gives boundaries with the northwest. Just look at the from the other corner to the other corner. I just need clarification on that, Honorable Chair. And we are on the path, because my take is, you are saying this office, one office, is going to coordinate its functions, institutional support, community life and career, and so forth. And it is also linked to Provincial Skills Development Forum located in the Premier's office. Further education and training and adult education and training functions located in the provincial departments. Department of Labor, Provincial Department of Education, CITAS. I need clarification, DG, as to whether this office indeed will effectively do its functions effectively and efficiently. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Father.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I only got one question today, but I want definite clarity on that. And on the other side, I also just want to say, please, members, leave the Northern Cape alone. That money's been long overdue to the Northern Cape. We need that university all for a long time, so please don't stir the water where there's no wind. I just want to know who is going to pay for the free undergraduate tertiary education at universities and FET colleges. So what I'm saying with other words is, who is going to pay this? Do you expect already overburdened taxpayer to do so? I just want a clear answer on that, on this free undergraduate tertiary education at universities and FET colleges. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Father. Honourable Dupila.
Just for the permission of my honourable colleague here on the situation of the officers in the Premier's office and in which district and so on. I just want to, while that question is on the table, what will the position of the Premier be on those officers in the Premier's office. Let me say the control and also the there's another word I was thinking about. But I think they understand. Somebody must control those three persons in the office. Not exactly in the office of the Premier, but under the office of the Premier. You know?
Thank you, Honorable de Villas. I think that question was supposed just to be a follow-up, but taking that you have raised that, it's okay. I'll allow the department to answer the questions, and we are going to have a second round on where members will need follow-ups to make follow-ups. They'll have to note while the department is responding to their questions. On that note, I'm going to head over to the department.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. I'm going to deal with some of the questions that have been raised, and I'm going to ask my colleagues, senior managers from the department, to respond to specific questions. We will deal with the questions as per program, so it won't be from one member to the next, but we'll combine the programs in respect to the questions that have been asked. In respect to the question on the organogram by Honorable Ncube, firstly, let me highlight that, Chair, we inherited these 1,114 posts in the establishment from the previous two departments. So when the department was created, a number of posts were transferred, both from the Department of Education and the Department of Labor. So we inherited vacancies as well. Some were funded, some were not funded. Now, in respect to the first question, whether do these posts include the posts for the provincial offices, the answer would be yes, because we have to use existing resources within the department. We did make a bid to Treasury for this financial year, for funds to be made available for this particular office in the provinces. However, we couldn't get an allocation, so we are using what exists within the department. In respect to why are we advertising only 80 out of 152, the response is that we are currently busy with our organizational design, and therefore it would not be prudent for us to fill all the vacancies whilst we are also busy developing the organizational structure of the department. The structure would therefore inform as to which vacancies do we still require in the department and which ones should be abolished. So we have to be very, very cautious as we move, you know, in regard to that aspect. I'm going to then go to the question on regional offices, because that falls under my line function. The plan, as we are presenting it, honourable members, is for the 2011 financial year. So this is the initial, processes of establishing the regional offices. We're starting with those three officials per office. Those officials are going to assist us to conduct the, necessary investigations and feasibility analysis as to what will be the best location for the placement of these regional offices. At this stage, we cannot say, it will be in a particular region. That will be informed by the study that we are going to conduct together with these officials. The issue of the relationship with the Premier's office, what we are saying is that one of the functions would be to establish those relationships with Premier's offices. We're not taking over the responsibilities of the Premier's offices in respect to, the Skills Development Act, but we're saying that they have to work hand in hand with Premier's offices. I think I'm now going to ask my colleagues to respond. I'm going to start with Dr. Mahlobo to deal with all issues around vocational and continuing education.
Chair and honourable members, I would like to just respond to the questions raised in relation to vocational and continuing education. The first one is the training model for educators. We actually did take note of the fact that the educators feel they actually argue that they have been microwaved into teaching the NCV. However, the approach now is to identify the subject and then train, get the specialist to train and support those lecturers who are training that particular, who are teaching that particular subject. In other words, it's not an invitation for people to come so that they can then spread the gospel. We train directly the people who are teaching the particular subject. And the size of the number is basically informed by, it's across the country, but it is informed by the subjects which we have identified as forming a weakest link in terms of increasing the certification rate in the qualification. Now, the other question which was asked had to do with at the start of the NCV, it was NCV and nothing else. And when the minister started and he reversed the decision to offer exclusively the NCV and reversed and then reintroduced the N courses. However, the understanding is that the vocational education and training system has got to be open enough to be a multi-purpose system. And therefore, to that effect, We also opened space in the FPT colleges for occupational programs which were accredited by the CETAs and are going to be accredited through the QCTO functions. And also we are working with other government departments, for instance, the Department of Public Works, the EPWP training is taking place in some of our colleges. And the NARISEC project of the Department of Land Reform and of the Rural Development and Land Reform, the training also is taking part in our colleges. In other words, the college environment is open for both your subsidized programs and those which are responding to the needs of the community where the college is. It's an open field in terms of program offering. The question with regard to assisting the students who do not meet the requirements for entry into universities, there are basically three approaches. One approach is some colleges run foundational programs. Say, for instance, a student performed well in many other subjects but had a problem in physics and mathematics. And then a college then works with a university to improve the mathematics and physics of the particular student, and with a view that the student can then later articulate into that university. And another approach is, you will note that there were already post-matric qualifications, for instance, the N6 diploma is a post-matric qualification. And if you were not to be able to be admitted at a university, you would then come to an FET college and do N4, 5, and N6 and get either 18 months or 2 years of placement in the workplace, and then get an N6 diploma. And many of the universities have had relationships with colleges to then take the students with N6 into university programs. Now, with regard to workbooks, the workbooks is an extension of the program which we had already started with in 2010-11, where we provided first the lecturer consent with mathematics, and then also distribute the workbooks to students. In other words, it's for both lecturers to support the students in the teaching of mathematics or whatever subject it is concerned. The support to maths curriculum in 20 colleges, and in this instance also the spread of colleges is basically across the country, and we identify the college where the maths is mostly the problem, and then put lecturers through training across the country, and we have established capacity in many of our colleges to work with universities so that they can come at a particular focal point to be trained and to be assisted with training in mathematics. And so as one of our weakest links in the curriculum, particularly both whether it's NATED programs or it's NCV, if we could crack the mathematics pass rate, and we would be able to have a far much better and efficient system. And at the moment, that's the problem we're trying to deal with. The increase in enrollment, in the allocation on the presentation, there is 104 million. That 104 million is allocated to the FET college sector as for adjustment for improvement of conditions of service of FET college lecturers. The 250 million. It's for the increase in enrollment of students. However, we have put a condition on the 250 million that it must focus on nothing else but artisan training, and therefore we take students into that 250 million for no other program but programs which are relating to artisan development. The other question had to do with the increase in examinations. The examinations we are talking about here is the examinations of the General Education and Training Certificate, which is level 4 of ABET. That is the setting of examination. And then we're talking about the examinations in FET colleges only, and it does not include exams in basic education. The increase in the budget is actually has to do with the fact that over the years, even when the DOE was still alive, this function has always been underfunded. There has not been adequate funding to fund this function, and therefore the increase is actually an attempt to close the gap which has been there over the years, which has been historically part of the system. And I think those are the questions with regard to vocational education and training, DD.
Mr. to deal with the issues of the NSF and learnership.
Thank you, Acting DG and Honorable Chairperson. The question on learnership or learnerships relates to the fact that there has been a heavy reliance that has been placed on the private providers, especially in the past. I want to indicate that this is a situation that exists, and it's a part of the problem that has been identified by the minister as something that needs to be addressed. Whilst it is important that we engage private institutions and the private sector in ensuring that the skills delivery takes place in the country, but the level of reliance that has been placed on the system, by the system on these private providers, has on its in its own way created some of the problems that exist within the system. The whole issue of the quality of graduates that come out of the learnership program is also a matter that has been identified as a serious problem that needs to be addressed. This whole issue is also as a result of the accreditation that is done by the CETAs themselves, and thereafter funding the very institutions they have accredited to offer courses. There hasn't been a separation of duties insofar as that is concerned. And to bring about a solution to this problem, an institution called the QCTO, that is a Quality Council for Trades and Occupations, was established in April 2009 by the department. It's still in the process of ensuring that it establishes itself across all areas where it has to have an impact. And in that process of establishing itself, it also has to ensure that the necessary linkages with other quality councils that exist in the country is done in a proper way. The deliberate move by the department to link the CETAs to FET colleges and universities, and also universities of technology, is also intending to deal with the problem of the quality of learnerships that we have been offering as the whole skills development system. The process underway is that the minister is going to be entering into SLAs with all the within those SLAs, there are concrete linkages that each of the sitters have established with the FET system. That establishment of linkages with FET system does not necessarily exclude the private providers, because quite a lot of other programs are mainly offered by private institutions. So the department would still ensure that it harnesses that capacity that exists in the private sector environment. However, it becomes critical as we move forward to ensure that our sitters have this deliberate link with the colleges, through which we will ensure the young people who are produced out of the FET system, out of our technicons and universities, also obtain the requisite training for some of them to be in, even in a position to graduate. Something that has been bedeviling the system in the past few years, where quite a number of young people who have completed their theory are not able to graduate simply because they are not in a position to get the necessary training, whereas we have a fully fledged system that should be taking them onto workplaces. We also have a process through which we are strengthening the sector skills plans, because these sector skills plans work as the basis for the training interventions that the sitters have to undertake. And these sector skills plans have to be agreed with the major industry players where the sitters operate. This is a matter we've engaged the sitters for the rest of the previous year, that is from April to 2010, to the time when sitters were relicensed. However, insofar as the progress on that matter is concerned, when we looked at most of the SSPs, the quality was not the expected one. And there's a team of professionals that are looking at these SSPs and ensuring that the kind of information that is presented in them is properly investigated and is also acceptable within all the relevant industries, so that we don't provide skills in areas where there is no necessity. Further improvements are also on the artisan development angle, where the minister has set up a task team, which is referred to as an artisan development task team, that includes business and also to include labor. It also includes sister departments like the Department of Public Enterprises. That department mainly provides its capacity insofar as the state-owned entities are concerned. Quite a lot of work has been done in this area, and this is where a lot of focus going into this year and possibly next 4 years we will be focusing on. The country has given an indication that there is a serious shortage of artisans of all kinds, and this focus is ensuring that by end of this strategy, we have sufficient numbers insofar as this area of skills is concerned. On the NSF side, closer to the launch of the National Skills Development Strategy 3, the minister closed down all the windows that we used to have, as they all mirrored the deliverables that were outlined in the NSTS 2. However, he left open one window, which was not necessarily referring to any of the deliverables in NSTS 2, so that we can continue with funding open contracts and projects relating to the NSTS 2. In the current phase, up to the end of June, we are developing a framework and regulations that the NSF is going to be using in order order to implement the NSDS 3, and those would be published to all interested parties and to the rest of the public of South Africa, so that everyone understands how the NSF is going to be operating. However, at this stage, as the National Skills Development Strategy 3 indicates, one of the areas that the NSF has to focus on is on the key strategies of government. We have rural development strategy, we have the new growth path, which calls, as I have indicated, for artisan development, 50,000 as required in terms of the strategy. We have the issues around the green economy. There's a need for focus by the entire government on the green economy. So at this present moment, we are engaging with rural development. They are already having strategies in terms of what engagements will they be having and what skills requirements will be there in terms of that strategy, and how, as the NSF, are we going to be feeding into that strategy. We have also the environmental department. We are engaging with the department as well. They have also got a thorough plan in terms of how they are going to be rolling out their strategy and what sort of skills interventions will be required there. Similarly, on the new growth path, we are working together with the rest of the other components within the department to ensure that on the artisan development angle, we have a concrete intervention that the department is taking forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. McNama. Chairperson, we have two areas. One is in respect to universities, the two universities, the training of teachers at foundation level and sports educators. And I'm going to ask Dr. Parker to deal with those.
Thank you. Perhaps just to start with the issue of the colleges, teacher colleges, you will be aware that in 2009 there was a summit. Following the summit, there's been a process looking at the whole issue of teacher education and development, which has included stakeholders from across the board, ourselves, Basic Education, the EDW CETA, FACE, and the Education Deans Forum. And through that process, a new integrated strategic planning framework for teacher education and development has been finalized, and it was launched by the ministers in April. Within that strategic planning framework, a very major issue has been how do we strengthen the system to develop sufficient teachers for all schools. And so within that, we deal with the issue of how we will strengthen the system and develop institutions for producing teachers. There's a stepwise plan within that, which looks at first trying to understand the capacity of our current institutions, growing them as far as we can to deal with the issues that we need to deal with, looking at opening new campuses, and then, if necessary, looking at developing new institutions. The plan really looks at work that will go from now, 2011, through to 2025. Part of this is to ensure that we do deal with issues such as the aging workforce, and that we understand what the needs are out there in terms of what kinds of teachers need to be developed, how many, phase-wise and subject-wise. We're working very closely with the Department of Education to examine employment processes and also to understand what the needs are, so that we can ensure the enrollment planning processes with the universities matches that development. In terms of foundation phase teacher education, this is a critical area, and it has been raised as a specific strategic objective within our department. We have managed to secure funding from the European Union sector support project to strengthen foundation phase teacher education in our universities, And what this is doing is bringing together all the universities to develop projects and programs to increase the capacity to develop foundation phase teachers, and very specifically to increase the capacity to develop them in African languages so that we can deal with that issue. In 2008 we had 13 universities who offered foundation phase teacher education. We have now brought on board all the universities that offer initial teacher education, and by the end of 2014 we will have 20 universities offering programs for foundation phase teachers. We've also got a target of increasing the number of foundation phase teaching students at 10% per annum over the next few years. In terms of recruitment, Vunzulu-Shaka does sit with basic education, and we have a partnership with them to look at how we can help assist them in relation to enabling places within the university system. As far as sports teachers go, what we have currently is that we are developing a new qualifications policy for teaching in schools, and that policy specifically mentions sports teachers as a specialization that is possible. So as we go forward and we implement the policy and work with institutions to offer those programs, we will have programs on board for sports teachers. Then in terms of the new universities in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, the spending of the $300 million of the MTEF period will be for both universities in both provinces. And we're not thinking of starting them independent, you know, one first and then the other. These processes are going parallel. There was the question about what stage are we in this process. As was indicated in the presentation, we have got the task teams that are working towards their reports in June. In fact, we have had both interim reports have been submitted now. And there are some recommendations in those reports. But what we are currently doing is studying those reports very deeply in order to work at thinking through how we can create a technical framework so that by the time the final reports come in, we already have some kind of clear plan in terms of how we go forward in July this year. So the specific technical framework that we're looking into is taking into account, as was indicated, the infrastructural requirements, but specifically also the legal and governance requirements. There is also a major work being done in terms of thinking through the academic planning architecture. What kinds of programs are required in these provinces? How do we look at building the university over time? We understand that it's not going to be a quick process. It does take a fair number of years to build new universities. So although the process starts now, we have to look at how we build them so that in 15 years' time we have strong institutions. We're looking at what kinds of transitional arrangements need to be put in place, specifically in relation to the current operations of the national institutes and the relationships with the new university. There has been a fair amount of provincial consultation. It's been fairly broad. And we are looking at how these universities can become part of the whole higher education system, part of the network of universities we have across the country, but at the same time look at how it can be responsive to provincial needs. I think that I've now covered the main questions.
Thank you. A question, Dr. Masrobo, in respect to the breakdown of the 750 lecturers at the college. Honorable member, we may not have brought that information, but we could make it available at the later stage in respect to that. I now wish to request to Mr. Patel to deal with the question of the funding for free undergraduate education, and then the CFO, Chairperson, if you allow me, will make the final remarks in respect to the figures and the budget. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I know there's a whole debate around the issue of free, and if anything is free, somebody has got to pay for it. That's true, the Deputy President has said that. But we have an instruction as bureaucrats that in terms of the mandate of government, that undergraduate university will be progressively made fee-free or free, especially for the poor. And that is a commitment, and I think this budget demonstrates that commitment, that already there's a 20% increase in the budget, 19%, 20%. There's already an expansion in terms of number. Honorable Chairperson and members, the Minister has even gone as far as to indicate that where there are scarce and critical skills in postgraduate studies as well as postdoctoral studies, that other mechanisms will be sought to be able to ensure that these young people are able to become the cutting edge scientists and experts that we particularly require. Obviously, government services come from sources of from the South African community, and it's incumbent on the South African community to ensure that this ideal in regards to undergraduate education not being a burden on the poor is dealt with. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Honorable Feber. I think the question of funding higher education is really a serious question for all of us, especially public representatives, because it talks to the core of what we as leaders in this country, we think we can achieve given the challenges we have. If you look at the vision of this department, I will read it out. It talks about differentiated and fully inclusive post-school system that allows all South Africans to access relevant post-school education and training in order to fulfill the economic and social goals of participation in an inclusive economy and society. So our vision brings this word twice, which is very rare, inclusivity, which means it's based on a clear understanding of the problem we have, whereby in our case it's even awkward because it's the majority of young people who are alienated from a crucial developmental resource like education, making sure that they are informed and skilled and they are able to add value to the development of their own country. So we start from that challenge. How do we ensure that everybody is brought to the fore? But also, honorable members, when we're giving our budget vote, because we are fully conscious of this dilemma in many people's minds, that where is the money going to come from? So we thought it's important to bring back historical policy developments and legislation that really created this huge
problem, where laws over time and policies systematically plant in a very negative way. Because we think it's important for all of us to be on the same page. We can disagree on many things, but when it comes to this fundamental exercise, we I think we must all see it from a same perspective. And I'm happy that you find that members, almost all of them, they have huge interest in education. So we brought that back. And also, during the budget vote, we brought back the question of our constitution. If you look at its preamble, it talks about redress. The responsibility which was given to public representative was to develop policies and legislation which will redress the imbalances of the past. And Chairperson, I think I can divert a bit and say, I remember as commissioners of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, when we came to present in Parliament, members were not so keen in handing out money to people. But they agreed on one thing, that you can redress these imbalances through service delivery to the people. And one education is one area which was highlighted, that we should invest in education. So we brought all those things back during our budget vote so that there could be this vibrant and huge support from all public representatives about the importance of putting all our resources and encouraging even our private sector to invest in our education system. That is seen as a tangible contribution that this government can make towards ensuring that nobody feels alienated. And you don't like too many people to feel that we have no stake in society, because that society is not sustainable. So I hope from that point of view there will be this common understanding, even as we struggle with the private sector, because sometimes even with the sitters, you can see that people don't understand. They will think, but why is the minister interfering? What has he got to do with this? Not realizing that there is pressure that these people, they should get work experience and be ready to feel, to have that sense of responsibility for the development of the country, so as to have less tensions in society. I mean, again, all this, it talks to the promotion of social cohesion in society. All the aspirations that we are all sacrificing, spending hours in a cold province like the Western Cape, because we hope in our lifetime we'll contribute towards the development of young people and creating a normal, healthy society. I'm sorry, Chairperson, for it's taken longer. It's just that this is very close to my heart. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable Faber, we've got a procedure, the way we run meetings. It was an opportunity for the department, as the Deputy Minister is part of the department, to respond to the questions that you have raised. I'm just going to check just one question outstanding.
Yes, Honourable Chair, there was a question by Honourable de Villiers on the systems for monitoring the transfers to public institutions. I'm going to ask the CFO to assist with that.
Thank you, Chairperson. In that respect, I think there's quite a number of issues to be raised. The monitoring and evaluation of the transfers specifically and the utilization thereof is in terms of universities, FET colleges and our public entities separately. The reason being that they are managed under different legislation. So the monitoring of universities takes also place in two ways. There's the normal subsidy, the block grant subsidy that they receive, and those are mainly monitored through the annual financial statements and annual reports that we receive of those institutions within the normal operations. But many of the universities also receive specific earmarked grants, for instance, specific infrastructure grants. and on those they are obliged to submit separate reports, which is more than once per year, so that there is a continuous monitoring of the progress on those specific projects. Those reports are also finally received on an annual basis as well, to monitor the total allocation compared to actual expenditure in progress on each of those projects. But in the FET sector, we have also the two separate kinds of reports. On the one side, the activities of each FET colleges, they are monitored by the FET branch, where they also receive on a monthly basis specific reports, not only on expenditure but also on performance information from the FET colleges itself. Secondly, we have, in terms of the FET conditional grant, a separate set of reporting in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, where provinces on a monthly basis report to the department in terms of the transfers to the FET colleges. And secondly, we also have quarterly performance monitoring reports that submitted in terms of the Division of Revenue Act. In terms of the public entities, they have specific reporting requirements in terms of their own acts, but then also the most important is the quarterly reports that's required in terms of the PFMA and the Treasury regulations. Those quarterly reports are on spending as well as on the performance information. That's also submitted to the Minister for his notice, and he normally responds via letter back to each entity if there are specific matters to be raised with those entities. Chairperson, maybe just there was also a question that was specifically related to the increases on FET funding and the increases of examinations. I don't know whether I need to explain that in more detail. Perhaps just on the FET funding itself, the importance is that if one look at that third last slide, which refers to, I think the heading says key budget increases. I think there's two areas of increases in terms of the FET sector. Firstly, it's the NSFAS bursaries, which is separate from the normal FET subsidies. Those are the transfers that goes to the NSFAS. They allocate bursaries for the students that qualify at FET level, and those increased for the 2011-12 financial year with 898 million rand. It was below 400 million previous year, 2010-11, and that is the total increase in the current financial year. So the FET bursaries actually increased by about 200% if one take that into account. The second portion of increases for FET funding specifically is on the conditional grant. Now, what is reflected there is the FET conditional grant, the bottom three lines, in total increased by 354 million. The baseline for last year for the conditional grant was 3.773 billion. So that baseline increased to allow for increased student enrollments, an amount of 250 million, as well as for increased salaries, the amount of 104 million. The reason for that being that within the conditional grant, there's a component built in for the remuneration of not only FET lecturer and administrative staff, but also the staff at provincial level who's managing the FET sector there. Then there's a third increase which is not reflected here, because that forms part of the normal baseline increase, which is 200 million, which is the normal inflationary adjustment on the FET conditional grant. So in total, the FET conditional grant actually increased by 554 million from what it was in 2010-11. Then in terms of examination services on this slide as well, the amounts that are reflected there are purely the increases. The total funding for examinations in the first year, 2011-12, is approximately 90 million rand, but the biggest portion is for the funding of the examinators and moderators. Then there's also the normal operational expenditure, and the increase that you see of 39 million for the first year, for example, of that amount, 24 million is purely to increase the remuneration of examiners and moderators, and the other portion is for normal operational expenditure. I think, as Dr. McFilvey explained, the increase is as a result of a low baseline that we inherited from the Department of Education, from where that function came from, and we simply had to increase in order to prevent the historic over-expenditure on that function on a regular basis. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honourable members, I'm going to start like this. Honourable Faiba, it looked like you had a follow-up question. I'm going to allow you. And Honourable Pinky, and then after that, let me give an opportunity to members who want to raise new questions. I'll start with you, Honourable Borotho. Are you fine, Honourable Hunter? You're fine. Honourable Faiba, it's an opportunity. Before that, Honourable De Villiers, did you want to make a follow-up question? Is it a new question? Then it will be a follow-up from Honourable Faiba, and then Honourable Pinky. Is it a new question or a follow-up? Is it a... Then yours is a follow-up. It will be Honourable Faiba, a follow-up question. Honourable Mashamaite, a follow-up. Honourable Roto, a new question. Honourable Pinky and Honourable De Villiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, yes, I hear what the Deputy Minister says to us here today. But you know the Freedom Charter clearly specifies that we get free education for children, for instance. That we know. We've got, as education is very important to us, and I think we all, that's why we're here, because we've got a passion for education. But we also got on health, we've got the NHI that's coming in. Now, if you take all these, I want to say, freebies that comes in, someone has to pay for it. That's the reality. We cannot run away from that. Now, at the end of the day, unfortunately, the taxpayer has to pay for that. And if we like it or not, somehow, somewhere, the taxpayer is going to get fed up and going to say, listen, yeah, enough is enough. So this is what I'm just getting to by saying, is yes, we've got the obligations towards this, but isn't there another type of system? I know we've had the...
I'll be forced to cut you. You said you're going to make a follow-up and...
Yes, so that's why I'm asking. Is there no other option? Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. DDG, you have answered my questions on the regional offices. But my follow-up question is, as you have said that the staff will advise the department as to where to place these regional offices, can you share with us as to what time frame did you give these people to can advise the department as to where to place these offices? Time frame. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me start by saying that I would have been more happy if the organogram was broken to us. Why I'm saying this is because, yes, we are aware that this department is new, but as we represent provinces here and come from different constituencies, we really want to know what's going to happen in our different provinces and in our different districts. And this goes with, for instance, when I look at Program 4, because that has got to do with vocational and continuing education. Coming from Mpumalanga, where obviously we are just talking about the university. There's a part that talks of establishment, the other one talks of development, and I want to emphasize that at least we need to know where we are and time frames for this, because we have been talking this for a long time. We have learners that come from this province. For instance, I come from Mpumalanga, that go to other provinces because there are no facilities in their areas. Even though there are facilities, but most of the time you find that they go to other provinces where they are finding these private institutions. Now, why I'm talking about the different spheres of government, the relationship between the national and the different spheres of government, where we will know that as national, this is what is expected from the province or from the district. That would assist us much in knowing exactly what programs are there and who is monitoring them. As they were introducing themselves, I could hear there's one for quality management, there's one for curriculum monitoring and performance. Do we have that at lower levels, meaning the district and the provinces, so that service that is given, we are sure that is a service of quality that is being monitored and evaluated. Looking at the NCVs, I come from areas where we do have those long colleges that used to be technical colleges and now they've FET colleges, but you find that the very same, I think this has been alluded to, the people or the lecturers there themselves are not even well trained, and the programs that that are introduced in this very FET colleges, they are there, but you find that the learners don't know where to go after that, because there's no completion to the total completion. A learner would finish a particular program. After that, it is said that they must find a place where they will do their practicals, you know, workplace training before they are certificated. You know, coming from a constituency in a rural area, those are the problems I'm confronted with from the learners that go to this education, to this FET colleges. They are not assisted in terms of placement so that they can qualify. That is why I'm saying if we had the organogram showing what is happening at that local level, would have somebody to talk to and say, how do you assist in this? Going to the urban areas, for instance, from Mpumalanga, most of our learners go to Gauteng. There is this problem. I'm just going to raise practical issues that I'm confronted with from my constituency. You find that there is this college that advertises so well. It says it is registered with the Department of Higher Education. You go to the website, yes, it is registered. But there are things that are happening there. You find that they say they can offer, for instance, mining engineering in a particular college. Because on the website they will tell you, yes, it is registered, but the real courses, that programs that are being offered, nobody monitors them. And this learner will go to this college A and say, they will say, yes, we offer mining engineering. But towards the end of the year, when they have to write the exams or during June, they are taken to another college where the poor parents have got to take money out of their pockets and pay for the transport to go and write at a particular college. And they will come to us and say, I'm not writing there. They are saying we must go to another college because that subject is registered. Who is monitoring that? We need that assistance from the Department of Higher Education, because it's a problem. These private colleges are not just doing an injustice to our learners. They offer subjects that they are not supposed to do, to offer, and at the end of the day, it's the parents that suffer because they take out a lot of money for their children that have got to travel from other province to other provinces because there are no facilities there. Chairperson, my mind was just on that. We need to have, for instance, on NCV, in the basic education, because this was combined, we had what you call curriculum implementers. And these curriculum implementers will make sure that they train their educators and then they also monitor and evaluate. Now, since the separation, what is happening with those lecturers in the FET colleges? Is there, because you said there was a training that is being done. Who is monitoring that the training was really necessary and it has got results? And who's doing that? So maybe if I want to accept what was said by the DDG when you say they are still restructuring, and they want to say, can that process be speeded up? Because if there is no relationship between the three spheres of government, the lower part will always suffer, and the rural areas suffer more. That's, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I just want to start with the FET conditional grants. I've heard the response, but I need to raise this. The monthly and the quarterly. I think the Treasury, with the Select Committee on Appropriations and Finance, they do quarterly. And I was given a Gauteng report, I think, if it wasn't October, somewhere there, which was indicating huge underspending on the conditional grant on infrastructure. I'm not sure what is the situation now. And I'm raising this, I'm not sure whether I hear it's not, whatever. However, FET falls under higher education. And the conditional grant comes from the Treasury. And if I was even looking, I'd say, hey, but this FET college needs this thing. For instance, there was a process of recapitalization. Mulapo FET College, whether it's a satellite, then linked to a road board and other subjects done there. You go to Mulapo, infrastructure and utensils, leaves much to be desired. So, what in terms of your systems, you're talking good systems as you are talking, but practically, that is not what is happening. And that's what makes learners to suffer. Because as you recapitalized the FET colleges, you said, this college will offer this, this college will offer this, this satellite will offer this. But if there's money that can't be spent, then the Treasury will gradually take it away and at the expense of the service deliverer. And then let me then also raise the adult curriculum. I see here you have an intention of dealing with the curriculum. I think the curriculum leaves much to be desired because curriculum and infrastructure, let me say that, there are very few adult people that get access to the FET college. Also, there is, after the advent of the CETAs, we thought it will open up for employed and unemployed to get through. But the bottom, it has been narrowed. The process has been narrowed. A lot of money, but the process is narrowed. So few people then get access to the quality education. And majority, they then get to schools which offer night schools. A night school to Pinky at this age, who is unemployed or who is employed and be taught similar to the grade 5, which does not help this old Pinky. And Pinky can't be linked to an FET college to give the sustainable skills. So that's why there has been the separation. You have to focus on those things. And it's still there, I know we might be faced with problems of infrastructure and all this, but it is much to be designed. The curriculum is just to fast track that thing so that it helps people, and the question of unemployed, it can help also helping the unemployed people rather than just getting IEOO, which it does not help. The last, on the recognition of prior learning. Whilst also I was in COSATU and in SATU, one was part of the advent of the SAQA and so on, all this. But on the RPL, you find in all the courses in higher education, both private and public and the private, and CETA's learnerships, everybody will say RPL for compliance sake and not for practical sake, to help the learner. So for the recognition of the knowledge that Pinky has as an adult. But in practice, I remember at that time the higher education institutions were also saying, we want to implement this, but we don't know. We need capacity. And there was a cry at that time of opening up or establishing an institution that can help all the providers, both higher education, whether you are a private provider or you are a university. I'm not sure what is it, but if you have not thought about it, there's that thing, so that we realize the intention of the recognition of prior learning. Lastly, whilst it may not only be the minister's responsibility, Honorable Faba, you need to go back and read what the Freedom Charter says. However, taking it forward, taking it forward, the ruling party has resolutions that it took in the 51st conference. That is what is now taken forward by the Freedom Free Education. Thank you.
Honorable public Pinky, can you respect this meeting? Because I think the Honorable Minister has responded to the question. So, Honorable Faba, can you just pull up? It's fine. I'm expecting Honorable members to behave like Honorable members.
Yes.
Please.
Yes, Madam Chair, just by saying we are all sitting here and we are representing our provinces, and I'm not having a political fight here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Let me just... Honourable civilians, put your hand up. I'm sorry about that. I'm going to put you like an honourable member.
Thank you.
I think you forget about me. Chairperson, my question is about the 41% and the 45% pass rate on trace test. Did the department already identify the problem why we cannot reach the 50% pass rate in the trace test? And if so, what are the problems, and do they already communicate those problems with the lecturers at the different colleges? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Civilius. Before, let me just ask, only have two questions to ask, just quick, because I think members, honorable members, well behaved, they posed questions. I'm very happy as the chairperson where I'm seated. I just want to check under your baking rule. What is the time frame that the department has set themselves to fill up the post? And the other thing is that out of this temporary field, which where I'm seated, I feel that I'm afraid of using acting because while you are introducing the diplomacy in Hollywood. Maybe just a diplomacy, just to avoid chasing that. How many crucial posts which are not filled? And the other question is on page 17. They're not all numbered. Some of them are numbered. The occupationally diverted programs in Northern Tiger. When one reads this slide, those are the targets. But what I want to know, what is the current for the financial day that you have passed? What is the number that you have maybe? Because those are the targets for this country.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was a follow-up question in regard to the time frame for the regional offices. In our plan for the organizational structure of the department, we have as a due date 31st of August. Now that plan includes, you know, the model for the regional offices. So by end of August, we should have a plan and the layout of the regional offices. However, I do want to say that what would have to be considered is the centrality of the location of those regional offices, as well as the use of the existing infrastructure. As I alluded to earlier on, that we were not funded by Treasury for this particular function. So those are the two considerations. Honorable Chair, in respect to the breakdown of the budget, the organogram, I will ask Mr. Patel to respond to this one. But I want to say that in outcome, one of the outputs in outcome 5 is the creation of the of a credible planning skills database. That would include the use of spatial analysis using modern technologies in respect to your GIS systems. So that enables us to have a breakdown of where the resources are going in, as well as our targets and where we are meeting our targets. So that is part of that particular output. But Mr. Patel is going to talk on that one. In respect to ABET, again, I'm going to ask Dr. Mashlobo to come in there, but I do want to inform honorable members that the minister established a ministerial committee to investigate or explore the issue of community colleges, which we believe that it's one vehicle that will allow us, you know, to address the issues of adult education. But Dr. Mashlobo will give us the details in respect to that. Mr. Patel.
Thank you, DG and Chair. I'm going to try to link a number of these particular questions together because it looks like, you know, we need to have particular clarity. I think firstly we must acknowledge that the first cent that has come into the department in regards to the opening of the new universities has been the 1st of April this year. That's number one. Number two, if you look at the issue, is the ministry is obligated to consult widely in regards to this particular process, and therefore those reports are still fresh on the minister's table. The minister has to consider that because those particular reports contain the consultation issues in terms of all the stakeholders within the provinces that have been consulted by the National Institute for Higher Education in the two provinces. So I would say it would be premature at the moment to give particular detail around exactly what's the form, what's the shape, etc., what's the time frames in regards to those particular universities. What has to happen is key decisions have to be taken, fundamental decisions, for example, where will be the location, you know, I mean, would it be in the capital of the province, would it be in a rural area, so it's that particular consultation process that needs to take place. The audit of facilities,
The issue is that there are different methodologies people suggest. They say take all the current small Manyana campuses all over and make them the new university. Others say let's have a cutting edge, brand new, first state of the art South African university. First one built post 1994. So that requires a different methodology and a different way of particularly doing it. But I am aware that both the minister, deputy minister, are quite clear that before the end of this MTF strategic plan process, that the first brick would have been laid and first signs of the institution would be up. In regards to the FET colleges, currently when the FET Colleges Act says MEC, it means MEC. When it says the head of department, it means head of department. That powers, honourable members, are still with the MEC. They're still with the head of department. What we've done is, because in the first place, the NCOP will take us to task if we usurp some of those particular powers that are located there. Although we do understand that there is this issue about, since the minister took, the department was split, we don't want to take responsibility and accountability for it. There is that. And we are trying very, very hard to work with the heads of education department and the minister works very hard with MECs to ensure that there is, that there is there. We have signed a protocol. Our director general, which is the head of department, in regards to a number of these particular matters. But we must say, and perhaps Dr. Mutlubo will be able to come in here also, that at the moment the monitoring and evaluation of the day-to-day is a responsibility of the Provincial Education Department. All those structures are in place. The only time we can begin to look at taking on responsibilities for structure is around functional shift. And there is, honourable members may be aware that the Minister issued for public comment, the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs released for public comment a constitutional amendment that will make FET colleges and AVET a national competency. Secondly, the Minister will, in fact, by the third, be tabling the amendments to the higher education laws. Bill will be tabling that, and in that bill, an interim measure stronger than the protocol but weaker than a constitutional change is by changing the word minister, MEC, to minister, and changing the word head of departments to director general in terms of the amendment. So if honourable members pass that particular amendment, what it means is that political responsibility will be taken on around it. And then comes the talk. We are already establishing task teams to look at possible functional shifts, because our biggest challenge will be the constitutional particular issue. I'm glad to say that, both in terms of all the MECs, all the heads of department of all nine provinces, fully support, and they really want to rush the minister to say, take this baby from us. The minister is very well wanting to take that particular issue, but we want to respect the particular processes that we have. So therefore, on the question of an organogram, there are units within the provinces that service FET colleges. Those personnel are employees of the Provincial Education Department. They have a line to Dr. Mutlubo. But when the decision is taken in terms of the constitution, we will have to deal with the labor relations issue, who the employer is, and all those particular matters. I think I've covered that, DG. The RPL. Dr. Mutlubo will take the private colleges because he knows some of the issues there. Chair, in regards to RPL, it's absolutely correct that, and the minister's on record of saying that we've neglected this over the 17 years. We had a commitment to recognize valuable learning that was not recognized. The minister has, in a remit to the South African Qualifications Authority, now clearly indicated to them that he expects them to really move on RPL. SACWA has already had a conference specifically on RPL, but what we've come to understand, and I think it's probably the fault of the administration, that RPLing cannot just happen with a magic wand. It cannot happen like a school. There must be investment by government in regards to specialized institutions. The point is that people must be able to get up tomorrow morning, walk to an RPL center and say, I'm ready to be assessed. And we must have assessors online, we must have funding and resources around that particular area. But within this strategic plan, we are going to be giving serious consideration to.
Chair, I think I would like to deal with question relating to the private colleges as well as ABET. This function, the private FET college function, is the responsibility of, it has always been the responsibility of the National Department of Education in the past, and it is still the responsibility of the Department of Higher Education now. However, two things which may be letting us down here is if a private college applies and the quality assurer says this college has the capacity to deliver these programs, we then do not have the capacity to argue otherwise and say no. The capacity to deliver the programs include the continuum, and in other words, the registration in terms of admission, the delivery of the curriculum, and the capacity to support, to administer and support assessment processes, and finally issue certificates via the quality assurer to students. However, it is unfortunate that some of the colleges which are accredited do not have the facility to administer administration, and therefore that function is outsourced to other public FET colleges. And that is where we then come in once we know in order to revoke the license, but subject to due legal processes. But this is what we do if we've been advised or we know that this is the practice taking place. With regard to the monitoring of the training of lecturers, I think Mr. Patel has dealt with that one. That happens between ourselves, but largely by the departmental officials in the provinces. I just want to highlight one point which is ranks high in among the priorities of the minister, which has been highlighted by Honourable Member Borotho. The issue of placement. It doesn't matter which program, whether you are at the college or you are at a university of technology or at a university. If the qualification has a requirement for work-integrated learning and you remain uncertified, unqualified for years because you have not been given an opportunity to practice so that you can get the necessary experience. Now, what the minister has done, he has engaged with industry through the industry, the employers through the round table, to say, and the SOEs, to say they must provide places for placement of students. However, the intermediaries to assist institutions to do that should be the SETAs. And so in our last meeting where we had college principals and the SETAs, it was agreed that each college will develop a database according to economic sectors and send it to the particular SETA responsible for that economic sector so that the SETAs can then publish the names of the students to the employers in that particular sector in order to deal with this with the problem of placement, regardless of whether you are from the UOT, University of Technology, an FET college, or just in any university. There are two options. Some options are work-integrated learning, and others require that you must be placed at a workplace in order to be able to go and take a trade test, and therefore you must have an internship program. And this is the challenge that we are dealing with now. However, it has got to be the institution and the employer and the sitter to form the continuum. In other words, to make the pipeline complete. With regard to adult education curriculum, I agree with the view that the adult education curriculum, as it stands at the moment, is not really speaking to the needs of the adults. And therefore, one of the things that has been done is to, with regard to the GETC, the General Education Training Certificate, which is a qualification to raise the base for adults to be able to read, write, calculate, and so that they can then progress to level 2, 3, and 4 qualification. And there is a process in place at the moment to look at the combination in terms of electives, but this process happens in consultation with the quality assurer, because the qualifications are at the moment the responsibility of the quality assurer. And at the same time, given the challenges of the adult education sector as a whole, the minister recently, the DG, recently established a task team. Some of the remits of the task team is to look at what should be the appropriate institutional base for adult education and training, because the night school approach is not appropriate, is basically an injustice. And also, what should be the funding mechanism, and what should be the appropriate curriculum for adults. And the first sitting for the briefing by the DG is going to be on the 23rd, and they're supposed to give us a report within about 3 months, on the basis of which we can then take the improvement in the sector for the better. If you allow me, DG, I think the CFO can respond to the issue relating to the under expenditure on the conditional grant.
There was a question on the trade test, the low pass rate.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Acting DG. In recognition of the problems within the whole trade center environment, and also the problems relating to the pass rates in that environment, the minister launched early or late last year the National Artisan Moderation Body, and the intention has mainly been to develop a common framework with regard to the development of artisans, whereby the issues around the curriculum, the subject combination with respect to the different artisan programs, be it a boiler maker or a welder or an electrician, a plumber, can be standardized, because at the end of the day, testing with regard to whether the person is capable of doing this has to be done in a particular fashion. Currently, we do know that there are various testing centers. There are some that are located within FET colleges, and there is one, the major one, which is at Indela, in Pretoria, and there are also privately owned ones. And it has appeared in a number of instances that some people who would be tested in certain centers would easily pass, because some of the training would be on the basis of what is going to be tested, not to focus mainly on principles so that the person understands the totality of what they have to do. So these are some of the problems that the National Artisan Moderating Body will also be focusing at, ensuring that in all the various testing stations that are there, with the industry support which has already been obtained, there is standardization in that particular regard. Quite a lot of work has been done in this instance, and the indication of a smaller percentage insofar as the improvement as indicated in the plan takes into account the fact that there is still a lot of work that needs to be done in ensuring that everyone who is involved in the process of testing comes to the party insofar as the National Artisan Moderating Body and its processes are concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask the CFO to respond to the infrastructure conditional grant, and I will lastly respond to the question on vacancies.
Chairperson, in terms of the conditional grant, let me just explain first of all that for the responsibility of our department is purely the conditional grant for the FET college sector. There is a separate conditional grant which is the infrastructure grant for provinces, the old PIG that they refer to it. That grant is managed by National Treasury Department, has got no responsibility over that grant, and that is the grant where the major underspending currently is. In terms of our conditional grant, the expenditure is close to 99%. The little under expenditure is mainly as a result of vacant posts in provinces who manage this function. But in general, there is not a problem with our spending.
Chair, if I may answer the question on the vacancies. We have 75 SMS posts in the department in the current establishment. That includes your directors, chief directors, CDGs, and the DGs. And at the time of preparing this report, 55 of those were vacant. I mean, were filled, and only 20 that were vacant out of 75. We had advertised 15 of these SMS posts in November 2010, and we have since filled 10 of those, and we have 5 remaining for filling, and the processes for filling those 5 are continuing in the department. In respect to DDG posts, we have 2 that are currently vacant. The posts were advertised last year. However, the committee at the time could not find suitable candidates, but there is a process of headhunting to fill the 2 DDG posts. The DDG post only became vacant from the 1st of May, and the post was advertised, and the processes are continuing in respect to the filling of the DDG post. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the Deputy Minister can perhaps get me some clarity if there is other options available, as I'm just trying to get a constitution for Honourable Pinky so that she also understands the Freedom Charter.
Why I'm asking whether are you still interested, because it's like you're not part of this meeting now, you are more concerned in your own. So, but I'm going to allow you to
I was just waiting.
Thank you Chair, for stopping a fight about the Freedom Charter. About the Freedom Charter.
We like a family.
Yeah, it's gonna distract us, the Freedom. The ownership of the Freedom Charter. No, I think really, basically, based on what has been presented here, it clearly shows that
there are all sorts of efforts in terms of saying, how do we pull different resources to ensure that through our public, meaning our own treasury and the private sector, we put our resources together so as to meet this, to strive towards achieving this vision, inclusivity, inclusion for all. So I can understand a concern of Honorable Member Chair to say, where is the money going to come from? But I think that's the question that senators, MPs raise worldwide when they are facing national priorities to say, where is the money going to come from? It's a legitimate question. But as the country, I think we have the answer. The answer is with us, that we lose all our resources to ensure that all South Africans get this skill, the ability to develop their own country. So I think it's a question which cannot be solved by this, by us here alone. Whether we own the Freedom Charter or not, it's a big question that we all have to debate out there. You know, I've been saying to people since I came here, there's one time I've been saying, you know, it's like you wish you had a constituency that comes from all parties that you can go back to in your area and say, good people, South Africans, fellow South Africans, what do we do in this area at least to ensure that nobody is left out in the cold? So I count on Honorable Faba to ensure that we continue to process this issue with all our stakeholders and come up with solutions. And some of the things that our officials are talking about, their expertise are not even in government. I mean, these assessments that Dr. Mahlobo is talking about, I know you go to Germany, you go all over, Netherlands and so on, those are high-level expertise. If we have to defend the elements of quality, they would have to be done properly. And some people in the private sector, they are better equipped to assist us with this. So thank you very much, Chair, for ably leading us without anyone, Honorable Member, owning the Freedom Charter. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honorable Master Maite, we are just about to close the meeting. Is that very is that? I just want to check because. Please. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I was looking in the operational plan of the department. It's well costed. But what I want to get clear is because it has not been a breakdown, no breakdowns on the budget, it's just the allocated programs. How the department is going to, you know, monitor the possibilities of underspending or overspending. Thanks.
Thank you.
Chairperson, the breakdown in the strategic plan is high level. However, when you go to the estimates of national expenditure, the actual budget documentation, you'll find there is a distribution between the various sub-programs, various activities, even items going down, goods and services, and various labor items. Now, if one would want to include all the numbers, the documentation will be extremely thick. But within the department, there's even a further breakdown that we have for each directorate in the department, a separate budget also per item. And that database on which that is a database that's also going to National Treasury. So in the finalization of the annual budget by the Minister of Finance, that information is made available to National Treasury, so they have it available. But to include all that documentation will really be a waste of paper. But each and every directorate has an allocation, and expenditure is monitored on a monthly basis within the department. There's even a monthly report that's going to the Deputy Minister and the Minister to indicate the level of spending within the department, and wherever necessary, how we can shift funds around to ensure that we address key priority areas that come up during the financial year.
Thank you. Honourable members and Honourable Deputy Minister and the delegation from the department, really it has been a very fruitful interaction. And Deputy Minister, I must say to you, your delegation came prepared, and it shows the type of the political leadership which is there in the department. I think this is how we're going to carry on, because really we cannot politicize education. For us as South Africans, to ensure that we better the lives of the people, we must ensure that they get quality education. On that note, Deputy Minister and your delegation and other members, the meeting stands adjourned.
Yeah, no, I don't.